Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham flying solo here on this podcast, recorded on a Tuesday. We're about a week in front of Christmas. Tomorrow, Wednesday, is a week exactly out from Christmas. So we're a week from Christmas Eve. And so we're the big thing in we'll be talking here on this podcast, UVA basketball, focusing on the return of the Cavaliers to the court from their exam break. Stony Brook coming to JPJ tomorrow evening. So we'll get you ready for that game. And boy, it's been a long week and a couple days since our busy weekend. Scott German and I, and I'll be joining Scott. Scott and I will be talking post game tomorrow with a review of UVA Stony Brook. But boy, we had that the ACC championship game back on Saturday, December 7th. Had to drive back up 29 real quick on Sunday, December 8th, and had the big ACC home matchup with UNC, and then we've had this time off since. So it'll be good to get back into the swing of things as far as that goes. A couple of news and notes updates first, though, that I wanted to share. And this one may be as much for my media friends as it is for the average listener who maybe doesn't pay attention to all the names of folks out there who cover sports, particularly UVA sports. But the media folks, actually maybe some of you readers and longtime UVA followers will know the name Tucker McLaughlin. Tucker is the sports editor at the South Boston News and Record down in South Virginia, South Central Virginia, down in the Danville area, a little about 30 miles outside of Danville. And Tucker's a guy that, man, I've known since my early days covering UVA sports back in the mid 90s. And Tucker, he's in some ways got the job, man. He doesn't just cover UVA sports. He's got credentials based on his location there in South Boston. He's not far from the Triad. So, you know, he's got credentials to UNC and Duke and NC State and Wake Forest. And he's at all the NCAA or all the ACC events. He's at the Final Four, whether there's an ACC team there or not. He's at the national, the college football playoffs, whether there's an ACC team there or not. There always is, but he's there anyway. Well, Tucker's had a setback. He had a setback a few weeks ago, pretty serious health scare, and good news. Hey, I talked to Tucker today, literally today. I'm going to write a couple of pieces for him in his stead since he's back in the office. Talked to him on in his office today, but he's not traveling very much as he's recovering from his health scare. And so, but yeah, talked to him and talked to him for about 5 minutes on the phone. He was the usual Tucker. Those who know Tucker will know when I say that he kept calling me Big Dog. He's back in the swing. So good to know that Tucker's well. And we're talking to Tucker. We're talking about getting him in better shape so that we can, you know, continue to needle each other, Tucker, us, and us, him, down the road. Also wanted to mention something. This is completely off the sports beat. Oh, maybe not. Maybe it's a little bit on the sports beat. Got a nice note from a UVA sports fan last night. I talked on our podcast yesterday, Jerry Carter and I, about how the story of Tess Majors, St. Anne's Belfield graduate, Barnard College freshman who was murdered in New York last week, a former intern of us here at Augusta Free Press, how she touched our lives, and the tributes that we've written to her, and how touching it was to me that so many of our podcast fans here, people who know a lot about Augusta Free Press, just because of our UVA sports coverage. We do a lot of other things too, but UVA sports coverage is one of those main things we're known for. How many UVA fans have reached out to express their condolences, and I've, you know, been humbled by that. Another great contact last night in that respect. And so we thought, kind of inspired actually by her fellow students from St. Anne's Belfield, who had a symposium this past weekend, already scheduled symposium, a student-led symposium discussing public issues, took up a collection to raise money for something near and dear to Tess's heart, the Music Resource Center over in Charlottesville, a nonprofit that offers professional quality sound production to students in the local area, Central Virginia area, grades 6 through 12, for as little as $1 a year. and 95% plus of the operating budget for the Music Resource Center is provided by donations. And so Tess, actually, when we met about a year ago this time, she did her internship in April and May, but she set up a meeting with me to talk about her then coming internship last December, just a week before Christmas. And she was, you know, full of story ideas already. I mean, she was at that point 5 months out from her internship beginning, but she had lots of story ideas. We were starting to flesh them out even then. And the first one she pitched was a story about the Music Resource Center. She'd recorded music there. In fact, she recorded her album there, Girl Problems, that came out this fall. And so she wanted to write about the Music Resource Center because she thought it would be important to let more people know about it. And her idea was, I mean, she wanted more kids particularly. She had lived in Waynesboro for several years and then had relocated with her family to Charlottesville as she was finishing up her high school years. And but she wanted the kids over back in her old hometown of Waynesboro to know more about the Music Resource Center so that maybe, you know, kids on our side of the hill, 20 minutes away, could maybe take advantage of it. Well, I'm going to highlight it for a different reason. I'm going to highlight it for that reason of, you know, the fees to join the Music Resource Center for kids can be as low as $1 a year. No one is turned away because of inability to pay for the services. They're professional quality sound services. Anybody out there has taken my advice and listened to the Girl Problems album of Patient Zero. That was the name of Tessa's band. And I've got links all over the place on our website to that album. Warning, it is teen angsty, but I love it. I mean, it just so the quality of the music is so good. And that was produced at the Music Resource Center. So I'd like to, she highlighted it so that more kids would take part. I'm highlighting it so that our listeners out there, I'm sure most of you are adults. Some of you have disposable income. Those of you who do, dispose of it. We've got a story on our website. If you go to our front page on Augusta Free Press, you'll see a link to a story, how you can donate to the Music Resource Center. Also go to Facebook, our Facebook page at Augusta Free Press. We have a fundraiser that we're doing for the Music Resource Center, and we've set a goal of $5,000. That will just help so many more kids have access to the services at the Music Resource Center. It was important to Tess. That means it's very important to us, this resource for the community. And so in Tess's memory, please, if you have the ability to do so, support the Music Resource Center, and it'll be a nice kind of pay it forward thing for Tess, who made it a priority for herself that this be highlighted. So we're doing it in her name. So let's talk some sports now. That's what this is today, a sports podcast. We're going to talk some UVA basketball. So I did a couple of pieces the last couple of days as we've been turning our attention back to the court, basketball court. Let's just get you ready for Stony Brook tomorrow night. UVA basketball getting back on the court with Stony Brook. Stony Brook, another team from the America East Conference. We're torturing ourselves playing all these teams from UMBC's conference. I think Tony must have had something there about that. This Stony Brook team has a 7-5 record. It's not a 7-5 record you might expect at this point in the season. Stony Brook's not really played a difficult schedule. They don't have any really impressive wins. Their biggest win was over Brown, ranked by KenPom.com, 189th right now. They are coming off a 82-78 loss to Providence over the weekend, so a 4-point loss to KenPom number 75. So that'll tell you a little bit about this Stony Brook team. This is a Stony Brook team that will be a challenge for UVA, like a lot of teams will. This, you know, it'll sort of be a good tune-up for Virginia Tech, I think, in the fact that Stony Brook will go four guard. The rotation, a seven-man rotation, largely features two bigs, 6'9" junior. Oh, I'm gonna have to pronounce these names, aren't I? When I wrote these names yesterday, I was thinking I'm glad I'm not Dave Kane having to pronounce these names 100 times. Momadou Gaye, I will go with that name. He's a 6'9" junior, and Jeff Otaheri, I'll go with that too. Don't have a pronunciation in front of me. I am sorry if I'm butchering those guys' names. But a 6'9", a 6'11" guy, who aren't big contributors. 6.8 points a game for Gaye and 3.3 points a game for Otaheri. And they play a combined 44.2 minutes per game, and they're the only two bigs who play. So the other 77.5% of the minutes come from guards, 6'5 and smaller. Two 6'5 guys. Boy, I'm really feeling for Dave Kane. He probably has a pronunciation guide, though, and I don't right here in front of me. Elijah Oleani. Man, I knew this was going to be a problem. And then Andrew Garcia. That's an easy one for me to say. And those are the two guys, both 6'5 juniors. You'll see this is a veteran team, a lot of juniors and seniors on his team. Oleani averages 19.2 points per game, shoots 43.3% from three-point range. Garcia, 12.6 points a game, 44.4% from three-point range. So those are both guys that they're kind of for the America East, certainly, they're stretch fours. You know, they're forwards at the mid-major level at 6'5", who, you know, they're certainly a challenge for teams at that level to guard with other 6'5 to 6'7 guys who play power forward. They'll be a challenge for Virginia. I wonder how Tony Bennett will react, you know, rotation-wise himself to this with the fact that his best lineup is – and has been for a long time this year. Mami Diakite and Jay Huff playing together. 34.5% of Virginia's minutes over the past five games have had Diakite and Huff together in the lineup. You play both those guys, and one of them, Diakite, most likely has to chase around one of those 6'5 guys. It's likely from Tony's radio show last night, Monday night, it seems likely Braxton Key is at least practicing with the team. It won't be a surprise if he's out there for some minutes. Key is a perfect guy at 6'8". He can guard everywhere from 1 to 5 on the floor. He'd be a great guy to have in the mix, too. But again, that means, you know, he's playing a stretch 4, which he plays very well. But if he's out there at a stretch 4, that means you have Diakite or Huff off the floor. And also Francisco Cafaro, who played so well against North Carolina. You'll see that Virginia's going to have these issues from time to time. Their best lineup's big. You know, all four of those big, 6'8 and above, are very productive for this Virginia team. But when you play the likes of a Stony Brook in this game tomorrow night, a Virginia Tech team that can go five guard against you, you've got to make some choices, and you have to be productive. If on offense your bigs are productive and they can do enough defensively to keep up with the speed of a four or a five guard lineup, then advantage Virginia certainly because of the size. But if the defensive end becomes any kind of problem, as Virginia Tech showed in that game against Duke a couple weeks ago, Tech led Duke 45-38 just about a minute into the second half, and Coach K turned things around with a timeout and took his big guy out and went small and you know, dominated the rest of the way. But he had to really change his approach in doing so. This may be a challenge. So we'll see how Virginia plays this tomorrow night. Again, it feels to me a bit like it could be a tune-up in a way, and I mean this in a very positive way, but, you know, getting you ready to play a style of play like you play Virginia Tech twice this year. I mentioned that that Stony Brook will go seven deep. You'll also get some minutes. You got a third guard, Mikhail Foreman, averages 14.2 points a game. A couple more guards, Miles Latimer, Jordan McKenzie, McKenzie, a defensive specialist for this team. But this will test Virginia. If Key's back, that'll be great. You know, I don't know that you need him for this game. Honestly, I think this is a game that, you know, yeah, it's a tune-up game, and you don't want to overlook anybody. Definitely, this year we've seen Evansville win at Kentucky, we've seen Stephen F. Austin win at Duke. You know, we've seen some really big upsets, and this wouldn't be the level of those kind of upsets. This is a Stony Brook team that's won seven games already this year. But it'd be nice to get Key back, maybe not to win this game. It'd be nice to get him back just to get some minutes, get some legs back under him, because there's a big game this weekend, South Carolina coming to town. And it'll be great to have Key sort of in the mix and, you know, getting some of that ring rust off before South Carolina on Sunday. The other column I've done on Virginia basketball this week, I did a first semester report card. I threatened to do this, and I finally did it. And my first semester report card, you know, until the Carolina game, it would have been incomplete or C-ish, you know. And I actually, when I did the report card, I didn't give a final grade. I just, but the way I assessed it was, we've played nine games Virginia has this year, 8-1 record. I don't know that I would have thought this team would have been 8-1. When I looked at the schedule ahead of the season, you got a road game at Syracuse to open. You've got either St. John's or Arizona State in Connecticut, depending on the situation of that 2-day four-team tournament up at the Mohegan Sun. You know, two teams who made the tournament last year. You had Purdue, the one loss, as it turns out, so far to this stage for Virginia, and then you had Carolina at home. I mean, there's in my mind, among those four, there could have been three losses. There certainly could have been two losses. And so for this team to be 8-1, and then you had the Vermont game, which we knew was going to be a tough one just because Vermont had that one circled. You know, that's a game for Vermont to – they win that game. They can say that, you know, they could maybe use that as a springboard to a possible at-large bid if the America East didn't work out for them this year. So 8-1, I would take it. If you'd have told me before the season this team's 8-1 and they have the one loss is on the road at Purdue, I'm pretty good with that. But that said, you know, and I would have said before the season, hey, this team won't be fully formed until mid-January, at the earliest, probably February. We won't know a lot about this team until then. There's a lot of guys new, you know, guys working in the mix and that kind of thing. You know, other guys playing, being asked to do more than they had been in the past. So, you know, I would have said again, mid-January, maybe early February before you had a good sense of this team. I'm still going to say that. You know, this team is 8-1 with Mamadou Diakite being your leading three-point shooter by a wide margin. He's shooting 47.6% from three. That's just ridiculous that, you know, your returning starting center is leading you in three-point shooting by a wide margin. Braxton Keyes missed three games, including the Purdue and UNC games. And your best shooter to this stage among your shooters, Tomas Walter-Tensai, Cody Statman, and Casey Morcell, is shooting 27% from the floor. Ugh. This is, you know, the issue for this team, as we know, the defensively, this is through nine games, the best group that Tony Bennett's had. There's a lot more basketball to be played, but it's the best group he's had in adjusted defense in a Ken Pom era, and in the Tony Bennett Ken Pom era. Offensively, eh. So you're number one in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency by a good margin. On offense, 140th. Last year's team, for comparison, was second in KenPom in adjusted offense. And I look back, you know, when I thought before this season, again, you know, kind of going back to your early thoughts and now adjusting them for where you are, my thought about this team was sort of comparing it to the 2016-2017 team. We know last year's team won a championship. Next year's team is going to be solid with all the recruits, plus Sam Hauser being eligible. He's sitting on the bench right now as a transfer, you know, that redshirt year as a transfer that's mandated by the NCAA. You've got the great recruiting class coming in next year. You mix those guys in with the current group. Whatever deficiencies we have now are more than met by what we have coming up next year. So this was sort of a gap year, you know. This is the gap year. And that 2016-2017 team, you know, the team the year before gone to the Elite Eight should have been a Final Four team. The next year was a number one national seed. That 2016-2017 team, it was the bad team of the last 6 years. Only won 23 games. Only won 11 in the ACC in a 16-game schedule. 18-game schedule, excuse me. Only won one NCAA tournament game that year. That's the bad team of the last 6 years. I thought this would be like that. And that team, if you remember, it was a great defensive team, and it struggled to score. I mentioned that Virginia is 140th in KenPom in adjusted offensive efficiency. That team was 50th back in 2016-2017. And you remember, I mean, well, I'm putting it in context now, because if you're a UVA basketball fan listening to this, and you are, you remember there were games that year, it just felt like, man, oh, man, oh, man, we cannot put a ball in the hoop. The overtime game against Miami, where I don't think we hit 50 even with overtime, the loss to Florida in the NCAA tournament, scored 39 in that game. And there were so many games in between and around all those that, it, you know, it just was a struggle to get points. And that team was much more efficient than this team to the stage. Now, the difference is that's where it finished. This team is still growing. What I would say about this group is my positive feelings right this second about this team come entirely from the second half of the Carolina game back on December 8th. 32 points in that second half, and the way they did it in that game. You had Walter-Tensai hitting threes. He was 3-for-4 from three in that game. You had Cody Statman confident. You had Casey Morcell confident. As a result, there was a little bit of tweak. It seemed like in the second half, Tony Bennett went more screen and roll action with Kihei Clark and the bigs, primarily Francisco Cafaro rolling to the basket off those screen and rolls. And because the guys were hitting shots from the outside, the Carolina defense wasn't able to cheat like you know, previous teams' defenses were able to just cheat on the roller, the big guy rolling the basket off the screen, and take away that dive and basically say, hey, you want one of those three-point marksmen to beat us? Let them beat us. It's not like they were lights out. They weren't Syracuse 18 for 20. They weren't 18 or 25 like we were against Syracuse last year, but they were effective enough that Carolina had to respect those guys out there, and it left the open. The middle open, I should say. So I'm basing my entire era of good feelings here today on a Tuesday before we get back in the swing of things tomorrow on that rather pedestrian effort compared to last year's group. I think we were 6 of 17 in that win over Carolina on Sunday, December 8th. But it was enough. It was enough to get us thinking. And here's what else is enough to get you thinking. Cody Statman, I think it was three games he missed completely. Maybe it was four. I don't have the stat right in front of me. And I should have it committed to memory. But he's missed several games from an undisclosed illness. I can tell you, there's some stuff going around. We all know that Bryce Perkins, the UVA football quarterback, had tonsillitis. My wife's had walking pneumonia for 2 weeks. She's just not coming back from that. Nowhere near the same as she was certainly before that. I think being around these people's got me a little under the weather. Undisclosed illness. He missed games. He's just now getting his legs back under him. Everything we hear, the people you talk to around the program say, the Cody you're seeing on the floor during games is not the Cody we've seen in practice. The Cody we've seen in practice is a lights-out shooter, and you'll start to see that when he gets his legs back under him. Walter Tensai, kind of similar, not an illness. We know he had off-season wrist surgery. And so for a shooter, he talked about that after the Carolina game. It goes 3 for 4. He's just now starting to feel comfortable with where he is in terms of recovery from the injury. He's talking about a guy who was a 47% shooter from three last year at the JUCO level, JUCO All-American. And people were writing him off. I was raising the question that from what I was hearing on Press Row, hey, was this a bust in the recruiting cycle? I don't think Tony Bennett has gotten this far as a coach to not know how to recruit players, but certainly what we had seen from Walter Tensai was very questionable. But now that you put it in the context, you see he was so confident in that game that went over North Carolina. And a confident Walter Tensai is going to be a guy that's going to draw attention out there on the perimeter. And when he draws attention on the perimeter, that's more open spaces for Jay Huff. It's more open spaces for Mami Diakite. It's more open spaces for Francisco Cafara there in the post. But he's starting to feel a little comfortable in there, which is great. Morcell, I analyze Morcell this way. To whatever level this has any value, I'm certainly not a coach, but and when I brag on myself in this way, I'm bragging on something that's probably silly to brag about, but I think I know a little bit about shooting a basketball. I was the free throw shooting champ, intramural free throw shooting champ at UVA back when I was a student there 25 years ago now. I can at least shoot the ball. I couldn't move my feet then. I'm 6'1", don't have the great athleticism that certainly makes you up. I wouldn't have been a D3 player. I maybe would have been a D3 scout team player, but I could shoot the ball. And it seems like to me what Morcell's issue is that his shot, it looks good. I mean, when you look at his misses, they're straight on. It's not like he's veering left, veering right, everything else. They're straight on shots, and they're usually long. They're either back rim, or if it's from a side angle, you'll see shots hit the backboard, but they're straight on the basket. Or you'll see shots airball, and you'll say, what is wrong with him? He couldn't have played this way in high school. They're coming out hot, in my opinion, because he's a guy that's got great athleticism, and his shot's just a little flat. And he's maybe rushing that shot a little bit, in my opinion. If coaching staff's able to work, the technique kind of things you can do to improve a guy, if he could get a little more arc on that shot, that would kind of calm down the hotness, it seems to me, is the issue. Get a little bit more arc on that shot. He's so athletic to be able to get that shot off. I think there's a Mariel Shayok offensively, basically. I out of Morcell, I see a Mariel Shayok. And what's different with him and Mariel Shayok, God love Mariel Shayok. He's playing the G League now. Had a great year after he transferred out and went to Iowa State. Had a great year offensively there. But defensively, he had the ability Shayok did, but he didn't channel it very well. Morcell's already an elite perimeter defender. So you take that elite perimeter defense that you get out of Casey Morcell, and you get some improvement. You get a Mariel Shayok offensively, and this is why there's a lot of hype about Casey Morcell, and I sense it happening. I'm not sure if it happens this year because it's hard to kind of reinvent the wheel during a season. You've got so much else to worry about. But, you know, we did just have 10 days off. I guess it's the last of those 10 days off from the exam break. Recalibrate that jump shot, and this kid could be dangerous offensively, and get him some danger offensively. He's earning those minutes on the floor defensively. And that's usually the big part of the battle with a new player in the Tony Bennett system, is getting those minutes that way. So you get Casey Morsell the confidence and get him. When I compare him to Mariel Shaq, Shaq has a jump shot out to three-point range, now out to NBA three-point range, but he was most effective off the dribble, the mid-range game, that old man's game, being able to use that athleticism to get to the rim, get to the foul line, and then if need be, pull up on those 10, 12-foot jumpers and knock those down like they were layups. I sense that Morsell has that same quality. His physique, boy, that, you know, he is a guy that he's a freshman, and he's got the physique of an NBA veteran already. And he's got the athleticism to match. Just channel that, and he's going to be good. So, it's a lot of talking about Casey Morsell here, but you get him going. You get a healthy Statman, a healthy Walter Tensai. You're going to see a more effective Kihei Clark. When those guys are doing their job on the perimeter, Kihei Clark's going to be able to find the gaps in opposing defenses. He's going to be able to penetrate, kick out. He's going to be able to penetrate and find the bigs on the dimes like he did so effectively in the Carolina win, 6 assists in the second half of that game, finding Francisco Cuffaro on a regular basis in the second half of that game. So you get, a more effective point guard. You get your bigs more effective. I'd love to see then if you've got the guard shooting just enough, then all of a sudden Mami Diakite doesn't have to float around the perimeter, to hit big shots from there. He can, be more judicious in his shots from the outside. He can be more effective inside. And Jay Huff's got me a little concerned. He went scoreless in 14 minutes in that win over North Carolina back on December 8th. Cuffaro stepped up 10 points and 7 rebounds off the bench. Huff's been at his best in the continuity ball screen this season, but Tony Bennett kind of went away from that against North Carolina. They were taking that away a lot in the first half. Second half, Tony went more mover blocker, and I saw a lot of just basic screen roll action, and that worked well with Cuffaro. Huff, for whatever reason, wasn't able to really get any kind of fluidity offensively in that Carolina game. And in the last four games, 7.3 points a game, 45% from the field, 33% from three-point range. For Virginia to reach a higher height than what I expect, which is more like that 2016-2017 team, maybe fourth or fifth in the ACC, a 22-24-25 win team. You're going to need to see more out of Jay Huff. But if not, maybe we get more Cuffaro. We started calling him Scott German. I started calling him in that Carolina game sort of Jack Salt 2.0. The difference being, because he's as physical as Jack Salt. He was a sort of a protege of Jack last year in his redshirt year. Jack sought him out and toughened him up. They play a very similar style of ball. The difference being that Cuffaro wants the ball in the post. He wants the ball on offense, and Jack was content setting those mean picks that he was so well known for and getting rebounds and playing defense. Cuffaro can do those things, and he's a threat to score. So if Cuffaro steps up and Huff kind of withers, that is what it is. I'd love to see Cuffaro step up and Huff continue to play an important role for this team. You get some good minutes out of Diakite. You haven't talked about Braxton Key, but he's the second leading scorer on his team, leading rebounder on his team. Get him back healthy. Get him back in the mix, guarding 1-5. Get those guards shooting, get Kihei dropping in the lane and playing his lights out defense. And this team could surpass my expectations. This year, I didn't talk about this in my report card, but I've said this a lot on podcasts, so you've heard me say this before, but the college basketball scene is still so uncertain. Kansas is number one now. They lost to Duke in the opener, and they've won 9 straight since, I think it is. And they've looked good lately, certainly. But we've had, I think it's 4 number ones already lose this year. Louisville, the latest. And when they lose, these number ones are not just losing, they're losing bad. I don't feel like anybody's really separated from the pack. I mean, even this Kansas team, they're the best team right now. I think they're clearly the best team right now. But, there's no sense of them being – you know, like last year, it was obvious. It was obvious to me. It was obvious to a lot of you that the two best teams in college basketball last year were Virginia and Duke. You know, we've seen years past. There was the 2014-2015 year where Kentucky and Virginia were undefeated late into the season. Duke emerged eventually to win the championship that year. But we've seen Villanova dominant for a long stretch of the season. There's nobody dominant this year. This is going to be a year where we get into March and we're still going to be wondering who the best teams are. And in that kind of situation, I think this Virginia team – I'm giving you the best case scenario. If we get, you know, more effective minutes out of J.F., if we get some shooting from those guards as they improve, as Morcell matures offensively, as we see the health improve of Statman and Walter Tensai, which then in turn helps Clark, in turn helps Diakite. If you see all these things happen, you know, perfect storm, this Virginia team can be as good as anybody in the country. And as we know from last year, you know, it's not about what your record is. It's about what you can do in March. And I honestly think if this Virginia team can calibrate it correctly, get there to March with everybody healthy and all the pieces doing what they need to do, this team could be right there in the mix with anybody. So that's my first semester report card. I've still got hope, and I'm trying to share that with you guys out there as well. So tomorrow we'll talk some UVA football, and we'll take our first in-depth look at the UVA Florida matchup in the Orange Bowl. I've got to do some homework before I can get there, so that's why we're going to do that tomorrow. We'll also talk some injury news and notes as far as football goes. Got some word on some updates on progress of some key guys in terms of health situations leading into obviously next week is Christmas week, but it's also the week that you start getting ready, game planning and execution and implementation of game plans, etc., for the Orange Bowl. So we'll you know, get you ready for that as we get ourselves ready for that, and kind of get ready from there. So we'll finish the podcast. I'm trying to remember to do this every podcast now. Because of the situation with our former intern Tess Majors, I always want to do something positive if possible. I mentioned earlier, and I'll reinforce here. Go to our website, front page of our website. There is a link on the front page under the tribute section, where you can learn more about how you can contribute to the Music Resource Center in Tess Majors' name, and that would honor the heck out of us if you did that. Because it was important to her and it's important to us as a result too. And one thing that Tess said is going to stick with me every day from here on out. She was inspired to do something totally out of the blue, and it led to her getting her first music gig booked. And so I'm going to challenge folks every time I do a podcast. Do something out of the blue. Get out of your comfort zone. The worst thing that can happen is that, you know, in her case, she called up a music hall, and the first time she tried to book a gig for her band, she was told, no, can't do that. But then eventually it worked out, and she was able to play several very important gigs for her band over the last several months. But it wouldn't have happened once if she hadn't just rolled the dice out of the blue and made it happen. So do something out of the blue. Get out of your comfort zone. Those dreams you'd put aside, dust them off and see if you can make them happen. And if you do, you know, pay it forward. Encourage others to do the same. So do something out of the blue, and let's just make the world a better place. Thanks for listening to our podcast, and look forward to talking to you again very soon.